This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehi Suhib. Coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight,
the Italian government wants to give greater support to countries at home to build their economies, to try and encourage people to stay in their home countries.
That's reporter Josephine McKenna in Rome. Italy's foreign minister is heading to Nigeria and Ivory Coast tomorrow with a new plan to reduce the flow of migrants to Europe. Full details coming up.
Also, refugees continue to flee from South Sudan in great numbers, and foreign companies are pulling out of the Niger Delta as militants blow up petroleum pipelines.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, more than 52,000 South Sudanese refugees have fled to Uganda since violence in South Sudan increased 2 weeks ago. The UNHCR says refugee flows to Uganda have doubled in the past 10 days. Also, about 1,000 South Sudanese have fled to Kenya in the past 2 weeks, while some 7,000 have crossed the border into Sudan. Since December 2013, when conflict erupted, nearly 900,000 people in South Sudanese have fled to neighboring countries. UN Refugee Agency spokesperson Melissa Fleming says there are reports that armed groups in South Sudan are blocking roads to Uganda and preventing more people from leaving.
Refugees have also reported that armed groups operating across different parts of South Sudan are looting villages, murdering civilians, and forcibly recruiting young men and boys into their ranks.
She says more than 85% of those arriving in Uganda are women and children. Many children have lost one or both of their parents. Most refugees are from the eastern equatorial region, with smaller numbers from Juba. Cases of severe malnutrition have been reported among the South Sudanese refugees in both Uganda and Kenya. The displacement and health situation inside South Sudan is even worse. The UN reports more than 1.6 million people are internally displaced, and an estimated 4.8 million people are short of food. According to the World Health Organization, severe food shortages have created a nutritional crisis in the country. It estimates 600,000 children under five are acutely malnourished.
Libyan militants have advanced on Islamic State extremists in their stronghold city of Sirte today after the U.S. conducted multiple airstrikes yesterday. The Associated Press reports a militia from Misrata has been trying for 2 months to end the year-long occupation of Sirte, but the militia has suffered heavy losses and its advance has stalled. The militia supports Libya's new UN-backed Government of National Accord in Tripoli. Pentagon spokesman Peter Cook announced the U.S. airstrikes yesterday.
Today, at the request of Libya's Government of National Accord, the United States conducted precision airstrikes against ISIL targets in Sirte, Libya, to support GNA-affiliated forces seeking to defeat ISIL in its primary stronghold in Libya. These strikes were authorized by the president following a recommendation from Secretary Carter and Chairman Dunford. They are consistent with our approach of combating ISIL by working with capable and motivated local partners. GNA-aligned forces have had success in recapturing territory from ISIL, and additional U.S. strikes will continue to target ISIL in Sirte and enable the GNA to make a decisive strategic advance.
That was Pentagon spokesman Peter Cook. Announcing U.S. airstrikes against Islamic State forces in the Libyan city of Sirte, the Associated Press says no U.S. ground forces are involved, although U.S. observers are guiding the airstrikes.
Thousands of migrants have been rescued off the coast of Libya in recent days. The Italian Coast Guard and vessels from the European Union and humanitarian agencies are all conducting rescue operations. Meanwhile, Reuters reports the International Organization for Migration says the bodies of 120 migrants have washed ashore in Libya over the past 10 days. The IOM says the victims are not from any previously known shipwrecks in the Mediterranean. More than 4,000 migrants and refugees have died around the world this year, a 35% increase over the same period last year. Most of the deaths occurred on the Mediterranean.
In related news, Germany has dismissed Turkey's threat to go back on a deal with the EU to restrict the flow of refugees, mostly Syrians, to go to Greece. The agreement was reached in March and sharply reduced the number of new arrivals. AFP reports that Germany's Vice Chancellor, Sigmar Gabriel, says Germany and Europe must not allow themselves to be blackmailed. The European Union says Turkey must meet more conditions before its citizens are granted visa-free travel. The EU is concerned about Turkey's human rights record.
As the migrant crisis appears to show no end in sight, the European Union has given Italy the go-ahead for a new plan to help reduce the migrant flow from Africa. Italian Foreign Minister Paolo Gentiloni is heading to Nigeria and Ivory Coast tomorrow to push an Italian concept called a migration compact. It would try to discourage migrants from leaving their home countries for the risky journey to Europe. Under the plan, the EU will work to build up failing African economies so that people can make a living at home. Reporter Josephine McKenna spoke with me about the Italian minister's trip and his migration compact.
Well, as we've seen in the last few months, the Italian government has been pushing for greater focus on countries of origin, these countries in Africa where we've seen thousands of migrants fleeing, trying to make that perilous journey across the Mediterranean and build a new life in Europe. The Italian government wants to give greater support to countries at home to build their economies, to try and encourage people to stay in their home countries. Now, he will be going to Nigeria and the Ivory Coast. And the Foreign Minister, Paolo Gentiloni, has said this will be the first step in trying to really push forward this project called the Migration Compact, this idea of offering financial support to African countries to help them get on top of their economic plight and reduce the number of migrants who are leaving those countries.
So this initiative is something that the EU has already agreed to fund. And how will the money be used in the countries?
Well, that's one thing that has so far not been so specific. The Italian government has pushed for this migration compact. There is extra funding available. They're talking about greater cooperation. It's not very clear yet where this money will go exactly. But the minister has been expressing concern in particular about the growing number of migrants who are coming, saying this is a permanent phenomenon which needs to be managed and regulated through greater cooperation and a greater focus on economic development in these countries.
Does he anticipate that Nigeria and Ivory Coast will agree to this compact?
I think there's a lot of hope to try and build these relationships, strengthen these relationships. The minister said that in Nigeria alone, in the next few years, say by 2045, it will have the same number of inhabitants that Europe does. He says it's very important to try and build these countries, build their economies, try and create sustainable agricultural development and energetic growth, reinforcing the civil structure of society and the role of women so that these countries can further develop, really ensure that their people have jobs, have a future, and don't feel the need to leave and migrate to Europe.
Will he be heading to other African countries as well?
They're saying that other countries are involved, but I don't know which ones they are. On this particular trip, the foreign minister will only be going to Nigeria and the Ivory Coast, but the Italian government does have a focused in the region. And we saw that just last week with the release of a joint migrant awareness campaign that the Italian government released with the International Organization for Migration, trying to encourage migrants in 15 countries to have greater awareness about the risks and the dangers they face making their trip overland across Africa and then making that perilous journey across the Mediterranean, often at the mercy of exploitation and unscrupulous people smugglers.
That was reporter Josephine McKenna. She spoke with me from Rome.
South Africans go to the polls tomorrow to choose political parties to govern town and city councils. Analysts are describing these municipal elections as potentially historical, as the vote could see a dramatic drop in support for the ruling African National Congress. The ANC has ruled most municipalities since 1994, when it led South Africa into democracy after apartheid. But now it looks as if the party of Nelson Mandela is set to lose at least one and maybe more of the biggest metropolitan areas in South Africa. Darren Taylor reports in the second installment of a series on the country's local government election.
Centre for the Study of Democracy director Stephen Friedman says the ANC is under pressure because it's lost its traditional urban base.
The big story here is the ANC's loss of support among particularly middle-class black South Africans. One of the main answers for that is that there's a growing gap between what the ANC does in government and what middle-class people want it to do. It's seen as corrupt, it's seen as inefficient.
He adds that the poor in the cities are also turning against the majority party because they say ANC officials are invisible, unaccountable, and don't deliver services. People cough after police tear gassed them during a violent protest against an ANC municipality near Johannesburg. The demonstrators accused the council of stealing money meant for water and sanitation.
A 10% drop in ANC voters would actually see Johannesburg become a coalition-run municipality.
Gabriella Mackay specializes in local governance for the South African Institute of Race Relations. She says the ANC's popularity in South Africa's economic hub is dropping because its council is mostly all talk and little action.
The problem is they're a little bit for show. Good ideas are there, but it's like they can't follow through with them. Putting 20 people in contact with 100 job opportunities does not translate into 20 jobs.
Some analysts are predicting a humiliating loss for the ANC in Nelson Mandela Bay. Until recently, the ANC was invincible in what was once the centre of its struggle against apartheid. Political science professor at the local university, Jolene Steyn-Kotzer, says the ANC's lost support in the Bay because it's perceived as stealing from the public purse and mismanaging local councils.
There are two reports that give a detailed overview of corruption within the municipality. And it doesn't seem that much has been done in terms of dealing with the findings of those reports.
She says evidence of the ANC's fear of losing Nelson Mandela Bay is its recent suspension of several allegedly corrupt city officials, not linked to the official reports she mentioned.
Yes, there has been a cleanup of governance, trying to deal with irregular spending, trying to salvage the budget so that the city doesn't go bankrupt, and then trying to prioritize service delivery.
Yet conflict between top ANC officials, including murders, has brought development in poor townships in the city to a halt.
If you focus on Nelson Mandela Bay, for example, you've seen an ANC that has been crippled by factional battles. So for this particular metro, the internal politics of the ANC actually brought service delivery to a standstill. And that also resulted in quite a significant increase in destructive protest against a lack of service delivery.
The turmoil in the Bay has sparked anti-ANC demonstrations in the months before the election. Surveys indicate the main opposition Democratic Alliance, the DA, will win the metro. But as Stein Kotzer points out, they also show many voters remain undecided.
And it is that undecided voter that can either make or break it for either the ANC or the DA.
She believes the ANC will lose Nelson Mandela Bay and that the municipality will be controlled by the DA in coalition with smaller parties. Friedman says whatever happens, the trend of the ANC steadily losing support over the past decade will continue, especially in several big cities.
It does seem likely that the ANC will drop below 50% in those areas. But that doesn't mean that the DA, the official opposition, will become the biggest party, because if you look at...
He explains that past elections show there's still a gap of more than 20 percentage points between the ANC and the DA, and he cannot foresee the DA winning enough votes to breach this.
On the basis of current trends, the likeliest outcome in the three contested metros is that the ANC will be the biggest party, but it won't be the majority party, and that means it'll have to form a coalition if it wants to govern the city.
Friedman says such defeats would embarrass the ANC deeply, but it's too early to sound the party's death knell. I'm Darren Taylor for VOA News in Johannesburg.
Minutes past the hour. This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. As the militant group Niger Delta Avengers blow up petroleum pipelines, some of Nigeria's foreign petroleum partners are moving offshore to avoid attacks. But the international oil companies, or IOCs, are running into problems with their deep water operations. Christina Katsouris is the Chatham House expert on West African oil futures. From London, she spoke with VOA's David Arnold about the foreign companies pulling out of the Niger Delta.
They have been gradually divesting over the years. Shell has been selling, I think Shell sold nearly 10 blocks that it operates from those regions since 2010. And Chevron has sold a couple of blocks as well more recently. So they are gradually divesting their own assets and exposure in that dangerous, risky area.
Because of the violence?
I believe it's partly because of the violence, but it's also because the fiscal arrangement were more favourable on the production sharing contracts and the deep water operation. So gradually they've been downsizing. I should say not Exxon. It's really Shell, Total and Eni as Shell's part, and Chevron more recently. That has coincided with what we call indigenization, where the governments were actually promoting local ownership of the oil blocks. Shell actually sold most of its blocks when oil prices were very high. So there's been a confluence of interests at the same time, because the oil companies have been divesting their riskiest assets, but they got very good prices for them.
What's the future then for the indigenous companies that are moving into that area?
Oh, it's been very difficult for the indigenous companies, because some of them are run by qualified engineers who work very hard to try and build the companies up, but the low oil prices have hit them very hard. Some of the other companies have been more able to buy because of their political connections. But whichever way you look at it, most of them are struggling very, very hard.
The foreign companies then are trying to make a transition to the deep water operations?
That's one way of looking at it. They have invested more in the deep water operations. The problem is that even before oil prices fell, there was lack of clarity about what kind of taxes and royalties they would pay, because there was supposed to be new legislation to reform the sector, and it was called the Petroleum Industry Bill. And that has been on the cards since 2007. Various versions have gone through Nigeria's House of Assembly, and yet they have never been able to pass it. And in the background, there's been, you know, lobbying by IOCs for better terms, and then lobbying by government officials and people connected with NNPC for tougher terms. And they've never really been able to resolve it so far. because of that, they had not been investing as much as they should have been anyway, even before oil prices fell. Nigeria's reserves have actually gone down because they haven't been exploring and they haven't been developing the assets that they've already discovered. The problem is that deep water projects are very expensive. Once you get the deep water projects running, they are generally safer and less prone to attack. However, low oil prices have militated against investment in the deep water. There have been very few new projects approved. But that's not just due to low oil prices. It's also due to the fact that Nigeria's fiscal regime is in limbo. They have been expecting new legislation to set new fiscal terms for the deep water for years now, and they still haven't managed to solve that problem.
What would your advice be to the government of Nigeria in the next few months?
Send clear signals. Take account of foreign investment. Be realistic and provide clear signals as to what your intentions are, because things have been rather unclear recently, despite the fact that President Buhari has come to power on an anti-corruption program and he's been trying to clean up the corruption. He seems to have focused on that at the expense of a lot of other things.
That was Chatham House West African oil expert Christina Katsouris in London. She spoke with VOA's David Arnold.
The U.S. Army is conducting its annual training exercise for Southern African soldiers involved in peacekeeping missions and disaster relief operations. Reporter Lamek Masina has more on the story from Lilongwe.
Nearly 200 military personnel from 7 countries in Southern Africa are taking part in the annual 2-week training known as the Southern Accord. Brigadier General John Jensen is the deputy commanding officer for the U.S. Army Africa. He told reporters in Lilongwe that for the first time, this year's training includes how to effectively respond to natural disasters.
We've brought some U.S. military personnel who have extensive background in disaster response, hurricanes, tornadoes, flooding, to help look at all contingencies and possibilities of response here in Malawi.
Malawi has for the past 2 years experienced a severe flooding. Last year, nearly 200 people were killed and thousands of hectares of crops were washed away. The United States has gradually increased military training and assistance for African governments as part of the efforts to keep the continent stable. The Southern Accord training typically focuses on peacekeeping and relief operations. Malawi has currently about 850 troops deployed to the Democratic Republic of Congo as part of the UN peacekeeping mission there. The UN troops are sometimes called upon to battle militias or rebel groups in Congo's eastern provinces. Lieutenant General Griffin Spooney is the chief of Malawi's army.
We are not just doing traditional peacekeeping, we are actually doing the fighting. And to fight in a terrain like DRC, to effectively operate in the DRC, you don't just wake up one day, take your uniform and rifle, and you march in the jungles of the DRC. You have to train.
This year's field training will include shooting exercises and parachuting. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Lilongwe.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Curtis Bynum, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
next time on Straight Talk Africa. Shaka Sali and his guests will discuss the Democratic National Convention and what a Hillary Clinton presidency could mean for Africa. Tune in to Straight Talk Africa next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa. Africa.